Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your high pony of music news and cultural twinkle. I'm your host, Ben Ratliff. If you want it, take it. I should have said it before. Try to hide it, fake it. I can't pretend anymore. And we're listening to Break Free featuring Zedd by Ariana Grande. John Caramonica.
Shouldn't we say what edition of the podcast this is?
This is the
What did you do with your summer vacation podcast?
Yeah. We've been away.
Faithful listeners.
Several people have.
Yeah.
Nothing was wrong. Nothing was broken. We just decided to do this.
You make it sound so proactive. You make it sound so purposeful, as if like we planned this in January, our 2 week break.
We just slid into it, really.
Yeah, no, we slid in. Like you slide into someone's DMs, we slid into a 2 week vacation. But if you know us, you know that we really don't take vacations. We work hard. So why don't we talk a little bit about where we've been?
Well, I was in London recently.
Oh, were you?
Yeah, I was.
How about that?
I reviewed Kate Bush's first concert.
Not all 22.
35 years. No, they're still ongoing.
They're right.
If you want to go, you can go.
Yeah, cool.
It'll cost you a pretty penny.
No, an ugly penny. More like it.
And John, where were you?
Oh, I've been all over.
Tell me one place.
One place I've been is in the Los Angeles offices of Scooter Braun.
Sure.
Manager to Justin Bieber. Mm-hmm. And also to Ariana Grande.
Right.
Where I was able to have an audience with Madame Grande.
Her ladyship.
Yes, and soak wisdom and sip water from bottles that spelled out my everything when you looked at them from a certain angle, which is the name of her new album, which has just debuted and number one on the Billboard album charts.
Right. It came out last week.
Yep.
Now number one. I saw that detail in your piece. I'm sorry. I don't quite get it. The water bottles.
Okay.
A whole bunch of water bottles spelled out.
All right. So you're looking at this can of Coke Zero, which I just got as part of a $5 lunch special, right?
Yeah.
You see on the side, it says share Coke Zero with your bros.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what I'm doing here.
Yeah.
That's number one. So there were water bottles on a tray, each of which had a blank space. And an assistant had written out my everything in individual letters on individual bottles and then spelled out the words on the tray. So it was MY, two bottles, every, five bottles, thing, five bottles, in three rows placed on a tray.
And that was just for her benefit.
I think it was probably for my benefit, if we're being honest.
Because you'd forgotten
the title of the album.
Needs to be reminded.
I don't honestly think she noticed until I pointed it out to her. So no, I think it was for me.
So here you were in a room with Ariana Grande.
And also many of Justin Bieber's lesser awards. I mean, maybe they are the bigger award.
Could you even see her amid all the awards?
It was
She's tiny.
She's petite, but she was wearing very high boots with sparkles.
Yeah.
With like encrusted gems on the side. And she was also wearing an oversized tracksuit jacket, that was her late grandfather's.
Right.
And she said that she had not taken off in a month.
Here's my first question to you.
Mm-hmm.
Something that's really interesting that comes out in your piece is that it seems like what you're saying about Ariana Grande is that her decision to be sort of proper.
Demure.
Ladylike, demure.
Yeah.
Is almost at this stage a kind of like vanguardist move.
It does feel that way, yeah. It did feel that way, certainly a year and a half ago or 2 years ago when she first came out.
Well, give us the context for this.
Okay, so you have to understand that first, Ariana Grande's young.
How young?
She, I think, is 21 right now.
Yeah.
Maybe when she put out her first songs that were popular, maybe 19.
Yeah.
But she comes from the Nickelodeon universe. She played a cat, Valentine, on Victorious, and then most recently on Sam and Cat. Now, when we think about child television stars, we're mostly thinking about the Disney universe. And we're thinking about a Miley, we're thinking about a Jonas Brothers, we're thinking about people like that. Especially in the case of Miley, or even Demi Lovato, especially in those cases, what you see is this very, very violent rupture that has to happen in order for them to assert themselves as independent of their characters and independent as musicians, separate from the songs of their character, because they have musically inclined characters.
Because otherwise people just don't think well of them. People feel like they're of the machine and they don't have their own personality.
Yeah, they're just inclined to take them seriously, I think. Now, I don't have that problem. I like plenty of Hannah Montana songs. I like Demi Lovato's work.
Oh, me too.
Demi Lovato's work in Camp Rock is like among my favorite pop of the 2000s.
Yeah.
But plenty of people have that problem. So what you see with someone like Miley is this very loud disruption. She goes away for a few months, she comes back with her hair short, her clothes short, and her attitude on high.
Right.
When Ariana Grande released her first single, which was My Way or The Way, it was really prim. And it was also not a straight pop record. It was very much a sort of 90s R&B thing. It had a lot of echoes of Mariah Carey. Mm-hmm. She has a very impressive vocal range, right. Ariana does. There was a sweetness and a not quite sexuality about it.
Mm-hmm.
So in many ways, it was less radical than what someone like Miley was doing or what someone like Demi was doing.
Only if we equate forward sexuality with radicalism.
Right, in terms of the degree of rupture from the previous incarnation.
Right.
And I remember when I first heard that, I was like, well, this is really cool. It doesn't even seem like there's room for this in the market. If we start thinking about market forces, it doesn't have an obvious fit on pop radio. It doesn't have an obvious fit on like urban radio. It seems to kind of be landing nowhere, mm-hmm. but it's well executed. She has a really strong voice, and it turned out it was a grower. It sort of blossomed into this hit.
Yeah.
And then her whole album, her first album, had many, many more echoes of that same time period, this sort of 1990s sweet R&B with a little bit of sort of like 50s prim poodle skirt puritanicalness,
mm-hmm.
or whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I listened to it and I said, well, wow, this is really cool. She's got a great voice. She's almost like a torch singer in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Has maybe like a little cabaret in her. She was on Broadway as a youngster before she was on television. So that comes through. But again, it never really felt like, oh, this is the sound of now. So maybe it won't work.
Right.
And yet it did work. It debuted at number one. It went on to sell a whole bunch of copies. And she carved out this space that sort of stubbornly resisted the more overt gestures that she could have gone through, mm-hmm. that she could have employed, while still distancing herself effectively from the character that she played on television.
Do you think that she's a virtuoso on a Mariah Carey level?
Like vocally?
Early Mariah Carey?
Yeah. No, I'd say she's 60 to 80% of that.
But still, it's hard to deny. Like to yeah, some extent, she's a voice.
Oh, absolutely. She's emphatically a voice.
And I wonder whether it's more common for people like that, where the amazing vocal ability, when the amazing vocal ability kind of leads the cart,
mm-hmm.
whether that...
you're given more latitude, basically?
Whether what you do is a little more middle of the road.
Just fundamentally.
Fundamentally.
Like you couldn't even take the energy away from it if you tried.
Well, there's something about virtuosity that sometimes goes hand in hand with kind of ordinary pop music.
I think that's fair. Although, you know, I mean, this may be not something that people want to hear, but like Miley Cyrus is a very good singer.
Yeah.
She's a very good singer.
Oh, I totally agree.
She just doesn't deploy it.
Well, she's a hard singer and a singer with like soul, you know.
A lot of gusto. A lot of gusto.
But virtuosic, I'm not so sure.
Okay, maybe she's not virtuosic in the same way they are Ariana Grande is, but the thing is that Miley never really put out records apart from maybe like her kind of mid-period, like sort of like the breakout post-Hannah stuff, but maybe the pre-spazzing out stuff.
Sure.
She didn't really put out records that capitalized on the strength of her voice.
Right.
Whereas Ariana, right from the rip,
right.
was presenting herself as such.
Right.
And again, I think some of that's being a show business kid. It's being on a Broadway stage at age 13 or 14 and sort of projecting to the back rows. I think a little bit of arrogance.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's sort of like knowing what you have and putting it out there.
Right.
And sort of saying, I deserve to be here.
Yeah.
You look at her character. You know, you look at Miley versus Hannah Montana, and yes, there's similarities. I mean, you look at Ariana versus Kat, they're more at odds. And I think Ariana probably had farther to go to distance herself
right.
from her character, but her voice really accomplishes 70 to 80% of that for her.
Okay, so here's this singer who is liberated from the Nickelodeon bosses. Mm-hmm. She's not being told what to do and how to manage her image, mm-hmm. but she is making a choice to hold something back, to keep something for herself, mm-hmm. not to give everything away. How does she do that on this record?
On the new record?
Yeah.
Well, I think before we get to the new record, it's worth noting that on the first album, not only did she engage in this sort of 90s R&B revivalism, which at that point just wasn't fashionable, it was just a strange choice that really worked for her. There was also one of my favorite songs on that record is this real slow ballad called Almost Is Never Enough, which is a duet with Nathan Sykes, who was in The Wanted, who I think was her boyfriend at that time. And I think when I wrote about it, I sort of described it as Streisandian. And it feels very Barber to me. It's slow. It's languorous. It's very unadorned. It has like a real moist heaviness to it. Mm-hmm. And that's something that her voice is fully capable of. So coming off of that record and having those capacities, I was expecting something more of the same. I think what you see on My Everything, which is the new album, is maybe 30 or 40% of it is that. But now what she's doing is trying to apply her talents to what's happening elsewhere in pop music and bring that to her. Or go to that a little bit, as opposed to sort of being defiant in her perspective, which she was, I think, the first time around.
Yeah. So to pull away from being a kind of a theater singer.
Yeah.
And
I think Break Free, which we open listening to, is a good example of, hey, here's a big dance record.
You don't think Barbara could do that?
I think Barbara could.
Collabo with Zed?
I don't think she would, but I think she could. EDM, which is a term I hate, but EDM has sort of struggled to really bridge into mainstream top 40 pop.
Yeah.
And Zed has done some good work. I think he's probably one of the better songwriters, if indeed any of these dudes write their own songs, but he was one of the better songwriters in that space. Break Free feels like a sort of early to mid-90s pop club record, mm-hmm. like the type of stuff that, you know, used to be played on the old Hot 97, maybe, right. You know, pre-current Hot 97. And she sounds like a vocal, like a soulful house diva, like what we would think of as soulful house music mm-hmm. from the 90s. That's sort of what she's channeling. I don't know if she's consciously channeling it or if it's just her natural tendency, but that record feels very early to mid-90s to me, but it has that glisten, that gleam that feels very 2014.
Right.
So this collaboration, of all the sort of collaborations between EDM producers and pop singers, feels probably the most fully realized to me. But there are a number of strange collaborations on this record. A thing I couldn't kind of get over is, I mean, frankly, bizarre her taste in collaborators are. I mean, ASAP Ferg is on this record. The Weeknd is on this record.
I wondered about that too. That feels like, I mean, is that her? Or is that just a very now thing to do in like commercial pop music, to reach out from the absolute center and go toward people who seem like they're, you know, rule breakers or whatever?
I mean, here's the thing. I want to be cynical about it. Like, I really want to. I want to undermine it. Well, but who else is doing it?
And what's she getting out of it?
But who else is doing it?
If you're going to be cynical about it, like, it's just all business. You know, what's she getting
out of
it?
That's what I'm saying. If you want to do big business, to have a duet with John Legend. I mean, you know, like,
right, exactly.
something utterly banal.
So these people you're talking about, that these collaborations confuse you, The Weeknd?
Yeah, and ASAP Ferg.
ASAP Ferg.
Cashmere Cat is on the record.
Right.
ASAP Ferg, I mean, the record's like half a Calypso record, the one that ASAP Ferg's on. Like, I have no idea what's going on with that song.
Yeah.
And yet I'm intrigued that everybody seemed like that enough people signed off on that and said that's a good idea for her.
Mm-hmm.
And the song with The Weeknd, Love Me Harder, is like a very, very kind of dark song. And it's really the first, it's like the first maybe genuinely sultry gesture that she's come out with on her albums.
Right.
You want to listen to that for a sec?
Let's do it.
Yeah, okay. 'Cause if you want to keep me, you
gotta
So that's Love Me Harder, Ariana Grande with The Weeknd. It strikes me that the benefit of these strange sounding collaborations mm-hmm. might just help to make her distinct, to foreground her difference from the rest
but
of a lot of other singers.
But to whom? Because that's something that I think is interesting, and I get paid to think about music for a living. Mm-hmm. You think it's interesting. You get paid to think about music. Does the average 13-year-old think that that's interesting? I'm not sure if the average 13-year-old thinks it's interesting.
Mm-hmm. So tell me what's going on here in the Weeknd track.
Well, a thing that Ariana has done pretty steadily between her two records is invite someone to the party who's capable of talking dirtier than she is
right.
and let them talk dirty, and she gets the refracted kind of naughtiness from it.
Right.
This happened with Mac Miller on the first record. It's happening with The Weeknd here. It happened Childish Gambino is on this record rapping kind of dirty a little bit.
Yeah.
These feel like winks, and maybe they are winks to people like me and you and to older audiences to say, hey, I do kind of know what's going on.
Mm.
But none of them are so aggressive that they turn off what I imagine is a core pop bass.
Yeah.
And The Weeknd, I mean, you know, what Ariana Grande was selling on her first album was, I mean, essentially purity, for better or worse. And The Weeknd is the complete antithesis of that. So the idea that she invites him to the room and they have this, like, quite dirty song together,
mm-hmm.
I think it just lets you know that she's ready to play, or she wants you to know that she's ready to play.
It's a pretty high concept.
It seems like that.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing happens by mistake. I mean,
no.
These are, I think it's setting a stage for whatever her third album is going to be that will be more in that zone.
Yeah.
They chose to walk a very, very fine line from Nickelodeon star to full-fledged mature adult female pop star,
yeah.
and they walked a very different line than anybody else had done before, and I think it's worked.
Yeah,
it's promising. It's promising because I think, especially when we think about stars of this ilk, we tend to reduce to a pretty clean story. We tend to tell the same story over and over again, and so it's nice to have a different story to tell. And you know what that makes me think of?
What's that?
It's two great voices that taste great together.
I still
what you just heard was Cloud Busting by Kate Bush. Let's talk about where you were for your summer vacation.
Kate Bush.
Who I often think of as Ariana Grande as a modern day Kate Bush.
I'm not sure I follow you.
Please don't.
Well, Kate Bush has not performed a real full concert since 1979.
But she's released records.
Oh, yeah. She never really stopped. I mean, she had some gaps, but especially lately, she's been sort of busy. A couple of records since 2005. You know, why? Why now? I don't know.
Well, let's talk. Can you talk a little bit about the cult of Kate Bush?
Oh, sure.
Because I think that's, I mean, look, she's doing, what, 22 nights?
22 nights. It's still going on.
Sold out instantly.
They all sold out very quickly.
Resale market, thousands of pounds for tickets.
Yeah,
So, why?
Oh, why are people still interested?
What is she selling?
I think people are still intrigued because, well, A, obviously, nostalgia. You know, she is the sound of the 80s. She's a kind of ambitious sound of the 80s
mm-hmm.
in England. Very strong female figure in popular culture, and also like somebody who did it the way she wanted to do it. You
mm-hmm.
know, I mean, her records are weird, really weird. A lot of different kinds of people were interested in Kate Bush, not just art students, you
mm-hmm.
know. I think also Kate Bush was a video star,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm. early videos.
Yeah. It's kind of amazing too how well some of those videos have held up. You know, purely because of her magnetism and her body language and the way she acted out her songs. You know, her records haven't like sold billions of copies since the 80s, But there's still this interest in her and a question about her, which is, why did she do it this way? Why did she withdraw? Why doesn't she do concerts? Is it all fear? Doesn't seem to be entirely fear. Also, at a certain point, she had a child, and then she was like, yep, just not doing any concerts, raising my kid. She only appeared in public like a couple of times mm-hmm. over the last 15, 20 years. And when she would say, yes, things are going well, working on the next record, raising my kid.
Thanks very much.
And I think people had respect for that. So the question was, you know, had they forgotten about her in any way? And I guess not, because it's in London, it's like before that first concert, it was all anybody wanted to talk about.
So it was palpable.
Oh, yeah. It was all over the media, too, mm-hmm. the questions of, well, the amazing thing she did is that she did not let any details out.
I mean, like a Beyoncé-level security.
Well, some information seemed to have gotten out, like the fact that she was going to do something involving side B of the record Hounds of Love, which is this suite called The Ninth Wave. Somehow people knew about that. Mm-hmm. I mean, it must have been just like some information that leaked out from rehearsals. Nobody in her camp was saying anything about it. You know, so like people were writing articles about what could happen, what could we expect? Mm-hmm. And they were wild all over the place, like maybe she's going to debut a new record. Maybe she's going to do something completely insane. But it turned out to be something that was both like straight down the middle and crazy. The straight down the middle aspect of it was the first half hour was sort of greatest hits. Mm-hmm. And then she did these two really long suites. You know, you'd have to be a fan to be into it. The presumption was you were.
Yeah, sure.
Why else would you be there?
Right. Yeah, there weren't any casual attendees.
No. This is a smallish, I would say mid-sized theater.
So 1,000, 3,000, 5,000?
I'm going to say something like 3,000.
Okay.
It's a place that used to be called the Hammersmith Odeon.
Oh, sure.
It's now called the Even Tim Apollo. When she last did her tour, that was one of the places she played. The part that involved the most theatricality was this middle part, the suite called The Ninth Wave, which involved projections on a screen, actors/dancers, people walking around with like wooden seahorse heads, puppets, magic, and a helicopter or something that suggested a helicopter, that like an apparatus that kind of came down from the ceiling and flashed sound and light around the audience.
If you're thinking that this sounds like a sci-fi novel written by a teenager, it's probably worth mentioning that the creative director of this show is her 16-year-old son.
Right, her creative director, for whatever that means.
Right.
The other thing was, like, you got there and you got in, and when you finally made it into the area where the seats are, the you know, when you went past the lobby into the actual theater, you could buy a program. So big deal, a program. No. This is the thing that has all the information in it. That was only like made available like that minute, you know.
Yeah.
Up until then, nobody knew anything. Here it is. It's giant, and it was, you know, rushed out in time for opening night, and it's got all the information about what you're gonna see. And it was sort of astonishing to realize, whoa, there's, you know, puppets, and you know, there's CGI. I mean, like, it's crazy. What was interesting about the show is that it was both for short attention spans with all this like multimedia things happening. It's like a Pink Floyd show inside a small theater. But then it shifted into music for long attention spans, because she next did this suite called Sky of Honey from a recent record called Ariel. Ariel is a two-disc record. Disc one is like the shorter songs, and disc two is like this long suite. Probably the record that far fewer people listen to.
Right.
That's what she did. Mm. She did the whole thing. You know, it's like 45 or 50 minutes long, very repetitive, a lot of slow grooves. Like, this is music for people in their 50s. You know what I mean? No doubt. And so it was very interesting how she combined, like, straight down the middle and taking a lot of time to say something abstract.
Talk to me a little bit about her voice.
Like Ariana Grande, Kate Bush had this voice that could go amazingly high when she was
Is that younger. A sentence you ever thought you would say? Just what you just said?
Like Ariana Grande,
Kate Bush, dot, any, dot, dot. Yeah, there you go.
No. that's why we're here. Her first two records, there's a kind of helium aspect yeah. to them. Mm-hmm. In fact, for a lot of people, that was off-putting. There's some really ambitious songwriting there. Crazy key changes, for example. But she's got this voice that just...
Soars above.
She can't do those songs anymore. I imagine she can't do those songs anymore. She didn't play any of the songs from the first two records. It's just like most singers, you know, she loses the top end to some degree. And, you know, those songs were very, this was like the electronic pop era, and her phrasing was very tight back then. As she's gotten older, her phrasing has relaxed. And it just sounded more natural and loose. It's not like she sang off key. It was just like she sang around a note
yeah.
a little bit more than she used to. Mm-hmm. And the amazing thing was that seemed to be okay. I mean, going into it, you realize this person hasn't done a show in 35 years and is a very ambitious person. You feel that that person must be freaking out. That person must be second-guessing herself, mm-hmm. Must be thinking, I hope I get this perfectly right. But amazingly, she seemed relaxed. I don't know what that's about. I couldn't really understand
Maybe
that.
Fear was never part of the equation.
Well, that's right. I mean, she has admitted to some fear. Maybe it's not as much as we thought, mm-hmm. you know?
Maybe that's where she actually genuinely is home.
Maybe.
And maybe having her son there was a calming influence?
Maybe so.
Was there ever an option in that crowd to be disappointed, or was it just rapturous from top to top, top to bottom?
I didn't feel a lot of critical engagement around me. I just
Were you
felt,
seated with other critics?
I was.
Like from The Guardian or from the Daily Mail?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I just felt...
Were they high-fiving each other?
They were paying very, very close attention.
Diligent.
You know,
Diligent.
Because they
our
had,
colleagues. Yeah.
Well, they had to get all the details right.
Of course.
This was the thing that the lead up to this was incredible. You know, they had to get all the details right. In a sense, it was an entire theater full of critics. People were paying such close attention. They'd get up out of their seats and cheer and roar and then very quickly sit back down again because they realized that this was what one had to do
right.
in order to hear everything fully. It's been a long time since I've seen something like this. They stayed and cheered and, you know, yelled for more until well past the time when it was clear that that wasn't going to happen.
Mm.
Yeah, Kate Bush. Very strange.
What prior to this, what was your degree of engagement with Kate Bush or caring about Kate Bush or enjoyment of Kate Bush?
Well, the title Cloud Busting makes me think of the fact that I had this notion of Kate Bush as kind of a cloud that I couldn't quite see through.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps like a lot of guys, I knew of Kate Bush through high school girlfriends and their record collections. That mm-hmm. wasn't my cult.
Mm-hmm.
Found it really interesting, but found some of the records too overly dramatic,
yeah,
really, for me.
Sure. They ask a lot.
They definitely do.
Yeah, I mean, that's always been my thing is I mean, look, I'm down to be asked a lot by a record,
yeah.
but there was something advanced placement
right.
about them.
So actually, I was really happy to go into this concert with that mindset because I wanted to be surprised. Mm. I wanted her to make her case,
mm-hmm.
and I wanted to understand her in full. I was absolutely primed for like the retrospective, so I could get it, really. I mean, I'd done my homework and everything,
sure.
but I wanted to see, can she do it for me, who was never quite in the camp?
And my feeling from reading your review is you ended up atop the cloud.
She did.
It was
quite amazing.
Yeah.
Actually, it was quite amazing. It was an achievement to come out of nowhere and do something with such poise. And that seemed to satisfy so many different ways that people might look at your work.
Let's go out with An Architect's Dream.
Yes, this is part of Sky of Honey.
Of course, of course it is.
The second long suite from the latter years of Kate Bush.
Pure succulence from Kate Bush.
Thank you, John. Thanks for letting me talk about Kate Bush.
Thanks for letting me talk about Ariana Grande. More like Ariana Grande more likely to cover Kate Bush, or Kate Bush more likely to cover Ariana Grande?
I'm going to say Ariana Grande more likely to cover Kate Bush.
I'm just going to say no.
With Ferg.
Yeah.
That's our show. Thanks for listening. You can read John Caramonica on Ariana Grande and myself on Kate Bush at nytimes.com/music. Check out our Spotify playlist. And it's such a pleasure to be back and beaming our thoughts out to you again. We look forward to spending the rest of the fall with you.
Nanu, nanu.
Peace.